We talk about forests and forest management an awful lot. A lot of layers to it. CO2 and the moving goalposts of court cases. I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. Thanks for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe and contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. It's a fast-paced hour as we talk about forestry issues with Bill Imbergamo, executive director of the Federal Forest Resource Coalition, will be the keynote speaker at this year's Montana Wood Products Association convention. Julia Altimus is with us from the Montana Wood Products Association, as well as Paul McKenzie from F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Company.
Attention recipients of Medicaid and Healthy Montana Kids. It's time to complete and return your Medicaid redetermination packet. Don't wait and risk a gap in health coverage. If you haven't received a packet yet, you will soon. Follow the instructions you receive in the mail from DPHHS or complete it online before the due date at apply.mt.gov. That's apply.mt.gov. Brought to you by DPHHS.
Anybody who's been in Montana for any length of time knows, I hope, that we are still timber country. Montana is still timber country. Our timber industry has faced a lot of challenges. There are new challenges seemingly every day. But as a testament, I think, to what's at the heart of this industry is that in Montana, we are still defending our industry and still recognizing the value of forest management. We're going to get into that in a probably pretty deep discussion here today, as we've got a great lineup of guests here. I'll talk about that here in just a minute. We are talking forest management issues today on Voices of Montana. And welcome. It is Friday. It's Friday. Only two more working days this week. Something to be celebrating. No. Hopefully you get, this time to hang out. You've got this Montana weekend. Let's say everything's working out fine. Again, thanks for being here. We are two decades strong and working on three, an objective perspective here. And it's hard to be totally objective when we look at our forest industry in Montana, because it has been vital to our economy. It's been vital to the health of our communities. And then we see it being, I don't know what the word would be. I would say decimated, but I think that's an overstatement there. I do appreciate, though, that that our remaining industry is coalesced. They have come together in a lot of ways to remain strong as an industry in Montana. We're going to have a roundtable discussion today, and it's kind of built off of, it very much is, the Montana Wood Products Association. They're having it's their 51st annual convention. It's going to be at the end of the month here, Thursday and Friday, September 28th and 29th. That'll be in Missoula, Montana. I think there's still time if you're interested in attending some of that. The keynote speaker there is going to be Bill Imbergamo, who's the executive director of the Federal Forest Resource Coalition, joins us here. Also, we're welcoming Julia Altimus, executive director of the Montana Wood Products Association. And then Paul McKenzie, too, has joined us, F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Company. They've been around since the start of it here in the Flathead area. He's the general manager there. And first, let's welcome you all. Good morning, Bill. How's it going, eh?
Great. Thanks for having me, Tom.
Thank you. And Julia, thank you for being here. Good morning to you, ma'am.
Good morning. Thanks, Tom.
And then we get to hear from Paul McKenzie, too. Paul, what's up?
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having us on this morning. Looking forward to the discussion.
Yeah, me too. Where do you want to start? Right? Yeah. Let's start. Should we start with Bill? How about Bill?
Sure, I'll jump on it here. So first of all, congratulations on getting into your third decade on the air and Montana Wood reaching, past the half century mark. I'm the newbie in town here with an organization that's only about 12 years old. In fact, today is, I think, our 12th anniversary of our formal launch. And, I think it's, you put it perfectly. The industry is still there because the industry has defended itself, and it takes the efforts of groups like Montana Wood. And then in 2011, the FFRC was launched by groups like Montana Wood across the country, who are trying to make sure that the Forest Service can actually manage some of the land that's supposed to be available for timber management. And, that's how we're going to try to get ahead of this problem we're seeing with large wildfires and loss of habitat, and hopefully stem the loss of jobs that we've seen in the sector over the years.
Yeah, Bill in Bergamo again, executive director of the Federal Forest Resource Coalition, keynote speaker at the NWPA convention, as I mentioned as well. Bill, and we'll get into it. Paul and Julia, this is like a roundtable, so the last thing I need to do is lead the discussion. Feel free to ask each other questions and comment. And I'll start with you, Bill, because the address of your keynote speech, you know, talks about how we get things done, I think, in the forest in this current environment of very much divided government. How do we do that?
Yeah, well, you know, divided government's a mixed blessing, right? I mean, the disadvantage is, you know, we obviously need pretty fundamental reform when it comes to the Forest Service. You know, the Montana is the poster child for litigation based on laws that contradict and that make the agency's mission, which is, you know, it's a complicated mission. It's a multiple use mission. And the courts just get to decide, depending on how they're feeling, what that means. And that makes the Forest Service's job very challenging. So, you know, we're trying to help them sort through those things. We're not going to pass a big reform bill that clarifies missions and resolves endangered species concerns with these partisan ratios. So what are the opportunities? We have to try to make change around the margin. We helped get the agency a lot of the funds that they received through some of these big funding bills that have passed in recent years. They were supposed to lead to more management on the ground. And now what FFRC and Montana Wood are focused on is trying to get the agency to actually execute on those funding streams and those new authorities the Congress gave them the last couple of years.
Paul, I want to have you comment. Paul McKenzie, again, Vice President, General Manager of F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Company. That's Columbia Falls and in the Flathead area. Paul, you've been in the industry a number of years. Just your perspective, maybe on what Bill is getting into here as well, multiple use missions, as well as very much a partisan divide. How has things changed and how has the industry prepared itself to meet some of these new challenges?
Sure. Thanks, Tom. You know, so I mean, Stoltz is in our 111th year of operation this
wow.
year, you know, and so we've been through a lot of changes over the past 100 years, and, you know, we intend to be here for 100 years into the future. And one of the strategies we've always embraced is the concept of stewardship and the focus on our forest lands. And that's the reason we have a forest products industry in Montana, is because we have forest lands that need to be taken care of, you know, and without us, you lose a tool in the toolbox as far as how we manage our lands, both public and private. You know, we have 26 million acres of forest land in Montana, 15 and a half of which are managed by the U.S. Forest Service and are owned by all of us, the public, right?
Yeah.
And so when we start talking about forest management, we have to remember we're not talking about every acre. You know, out of that 15 and a half million acres, there's only about 20% of it that we're really talking about doing active management on. And that 20% is what we call the suitable timber base. And that's the area where we've done management in the past that generally already has roads in it. And so we've managed those lands for multiple benefits. It's also the area people recreate in for the most part. You know, you think about that huge expanse of 15 million acres, but majority of people don't utilize most of that, but we do utilize a lot of it. And so that's where we're focusing on, is on a small area, taking care of it, because that's also that interface with our communities as well. And so we often say healthy forests make for healthy families and healthy communities, and we really believe in that. And that's really what we're talking about today, is how do we take care of these forests so they can take care of us?
Yeah, Bill, I want to go back to you on that one, too, but let me first talk with Julia Altemus again, Executive Director of the Montana Wood Products Association. Any comments you might want to have early on here, Julia, but also wanted to point you in the direction of how important it is that the industry has coalesced over the past decades. Has that been the case, and do you feel it's because of that? Now, your organization's fairly strong, and it's also been around since 1972. You've seen some of those changes as well. How has getting together been an asset for the industry?
Well, thanks, Tom. Thanks for the question. And you know, the information that Paul and Bill has provided has been spot on. Over the course of the last, 35 years, we've lost, 33 mills. And so as we get to that critical mass of where we really need to keep the industry together. I mean, we needed to keep it together 35 years ago, but we're at the place where we just can't lose anymore. So because of that, I mean, we've reached out and we're involved at the state and national and local level, not only in collaboration, but working with the Forest Service, working with Bill, working on all these really tough issues, because the Forest Service certainly is a complex, not only the Forest Service, but the BLM as well, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, all the federal agencies, and even the state with its GNA program, its Good Neighbor Authority program, all come into play and are really important to the survival of this industry.
Bill, you had talked about tackling, or maybe the reality of being unable to tackle in a significant way, some of these measures in Congress that, in my opinion, are being misused by environmental groups, and also the courts have not, I think there have been some activism in the courts themselves. Is there any, and then Julia referenced the Good Neighbor Authority, some of those tools that have been handed over to the states for more management there. What is the likelihood or the attitude in Congress to be able to address, maybe in a more significant way, some of the issues we're facing in our forest?
So first, I just want to note that as challenging as the situation in Montana is, and Julia laid it out, you know, the loss of 33 primary mills, you know, is significant. But with the mills that you have remaining in Montana, you're still, in a way, you're kind of living in the good old days compared to several other Western states. And, you know, the reason I bring that up, states like Wyoming, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona hardly have any mills, if they have even one that's still running. And, you know, what the agency's found is trying to get work done in places where you don't have customers is darn near impossible, right? We have to thin a lot of acres. We have to reduce the density of these forests. And if you don't have markets, that's just prohibitively expensive. So in terms of Congress, you know, I think it's important to note the Montana delegation has been really helpful on these issues. You have two senators who sit on a lot of the right committees, and they have a big impact on the program in a positive way. The key issues that we're seeing now, there's one sort of plaything of the litigation community. It's called the Cottonwood precedent. And what that does is a case in Montana that enables environmental groups to get injunctions against projects in order to force the agency to go back and reevaluate the underlying forest plan. And these forest plans, in a lot of cases in forests in Montana, are older than 20 years. And Senator Dane's leadership, we actually had a five-year sort of exemption from that precedent that was in place that unfortunately expired in March of this year. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things we're focused on trying to get renewed in this Congress.
And Paul, maybe you'd like to comment on that as well. The Cottonwood precedents, how has that affected immediately the industry?
You know, certainly litigation is a huge challenge for Montana. You know, what you have to remember is that, you know, the agency actually wins most of their litigation. But it does kind of set the bar for how projects are done and what projects are move ahead and what don't. And, you know, the bar is extremely high. If you think about it, I mean, the only acceptable grade for the Forest Service is 100% in the courts. And that's a pretty tough one to meet. So even though they're oftentimes hitting 94, 95, which, boy, if you're getting through high school with that kind of a grade, that'd be a pretty good record. But, you know, with the bar at 100%, that's difficult. And so, you know, what Cottonwood does, it kind of allows a little bit more common sense to come back into this. You know, this is a balancing act. Managing natural resources is all about trade-offs. And being able to do that and bring some common sense, or I think the legal term is balance of harms, the discussion is an important tool for the courts to be able to employ as well. And so Cottonwood is just another stick in the bundle of opportunities to challenge the process that the Forest Service has to go through. And so having a permanent fix to that would be great, you know. But unfortunately, the litigants are extremely resourceful, and they'll find another stick to pull on too. So it's going to be an ongoing challenge. We have to work ahead through, but we have to remember the Forest Service has a pretty darn good job in the courts 99% of the time.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that gets missed along the way as well. I got to take a break, and we'll come on back with more. We want to get into the discussion regarding CO2 and how that has affected the industry. Paul McKenzie is with us, F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Company. We also have Julia Altimus, the Executive Director of the Montana Wood Products Association. And from the Federal Forest Resource Coalition, Bill Imbergamo. We're back with more forest management issues today on Voices of Montana.
If you have Medicaid or Healthy Montana Kids, it's time to renew your coverage. Not sure you still qualify? Don't wait. Complete and return your Medicaid redetermination packet today. If you haven't received a packet yet, you will soon. Follow the instructions you receive in the mail from DPHHS or complete it online before the due date at apply.mt.gov. That's apply.mt.gov. Brought to you by DPHHS.
111 years. Paul McKenzie with us, F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Company. We're also talking forest issues broadly and specifically here to Montana. Julia Altimus, Executive Director of the Montana Wood Products Association, and Bill Imbergamo, who's a keynote speaker at the MWPA convention upcoming in Missoula at the end of the month. Paul, congratulations on 111 years, number one. That is very astounding. Can you give us a little more of that history and then talk about, your presence in that valley? I mean, it's more than just economics. I think if people go to their website right now, they'll see a little moniker, a little banner that says, "Public, our lands are open." I mean, it's more than just a timber industry, isn't it?
It certainly is. You know, we're a big part of this community. We're a small company. With respect to the big picture of the forest products industry, we put about 70 million board feet a year out, and that's enough to build about 5,000 homes, just to give you context. We employ about 120 direct employees, plus we have another 75 to 80 folks that, you know, depend on us, that are our contract loggers, our truckers, our service folks, all that kind of stuff. You know, our little company puts about $35 million a year into our local economy, so it's not insignificant. We also own about 40,000 acres of timberland and have owned it for a long period of time. About a third of it's under conservation easement and will remain as timber producing, and it protects our watershed for the city of Whitefish. And our lands are open to the public. We think it's really important that people get out and see what a working forest looks like. You know, they get out, they recreate, they hunt, they fish, they walk their dogs, they bike. They get to see the timber harvest happen. They get to see the forest recover. Because, you know, we have one big problem in Montana, and that's these darn trees keep growing, and Mother Nature keeps moving ahead with or without us. And so
right.
It's just a great opportunity for folks to get out and see what we've been doing for 100 years and realize that sustainability is real and that these base industries are important to our overall economy in the state of Montana.
Let's move that discussion to sustainability, because CO2 gets involved there, but as well, Bill Imbergamo, again, Executive Director of the Federal Forest Resource Coalition, and you can find out, it's fedforestcoalition.org for more information there. Just to comment on the value of this infrastructure, not only to the economy, but also to a healthy forest.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is, you know, we've touched on it, and I think Montanans are very well aware that fires in the last decade are not acting the way fires in previous years have acted. They're bigger, they're getting bigger faster, they're burning later in the year, and, you know, that's primarily down to density and the number of trees per acre. And, you know, the statistic I've heard in the West is that on many, particularly ponderosa pine dominated forests, they have in the neighborhood of 200 to 300 trees per acre, where historically they had something in the neighborhood of 50 to 100 trees per acre. So there's 2 to 3 times as many trees growing on each acre. And, you know, it hasn't started raining more, right? There's not enough moisture to support all of those. So in these stands, you know, the only way that's not going to turn into a tinderbox and wind up emitting a lot of carbon is if you thin that stand out and create some space in there so that the fire can stay in the understory. And then there's, you know, there are other forest types that tend to be more uniform in their growth. And you have to create what's called age class diversity through even age management, which is basically clear cutting, and that creates some defensible space on the landscape. And really, in the Western U.S., the industry that remains is the best tool for getting that work done. Otherwise, it is just an absolute pure cost to the taxpayer. And, there's probably not enough money minted to take care of the problem if you don't have our industry to help take up some of that slack and pay for some of that value.
Well, and that's a good statement as well. Julia, do you want to follow up on that? I mean, that's one thing I think that the industry has been talking about an awful lot. And as Bill had noted, maybe it's starting to catch on a little bit. Maybe the ears are starting to listen to that message.
Well, I do agree with that. I mean, not only are we putting way more carbon into the atmosphere, we also have to remember that forests are a great carbon sink. And so if they're actively managing the forests the way we need to be managing them, that we can pull some of that carbon back out and not only keep it in the forest and keep it healthy, but also put it in the wood products, because wood products will secure that and sequester that carbon forever, unless you put it back in a landfill or something. But so we're definitely an important part of keeping our atmosphere and our air clean.
Bill, what do we need to know about forests and CO2? And there's more to know about CO2 in terms of what its real impact is on a warming climate. But what do we need to know about the forests and CO2?
Well, I mean, it's pretty basic, right? They're forests. I worked at a bigger association, and we were working on our messaging about sustainability, and I always had a hard time with it because, it seems pretty simple to say, listen, trees are the only construction material on the planet that's made entirely out of water, sunlight, and air. Sun shines on a forest, the leaves of the trees, in this case, the needles on the trees in Montana, absorb that energy and create carbon in the bole of the tree. And that carbon stays in that log when it's cut, and it stays in that board when it's sawed and dried, and then that board goes into a house, and it stays there for 100 to 150 years. So that carbon, and then another tree is planted and starts sequestering more carbon. And what we've seen with the decision in the 1990s to stop managing the national forests, timber harvest declined by 85 to 90%, depending on which region you were in. And region one was one of the more dramatic declines. We've seen, seven times the number of acres have burned in the last 20 years than has experienced any kind of harvest anywhere in the national forest system. So we have this opportunity to store carbon in wood products and get new trees growing and sequester carbon in the woods, and instead we're burning it and emitting it to the atmosphere. And coincidentally, carbon emissions from wildfires just in the last 10 years have gone up by sevenfold as well.
Well, and there's a lot of science out there that shows how important that is to do something about that in terms of, we're looking at electrifying our transportation grid and all of the vehicles, all the electric vehicles in California, all of the motor vehicles, I read a report on this, emit less than the California forest fires did in 1 month's time. Go ahead, Bill.
Exactly. The 2021 fire season, which was really dramatic elsewhere, as my friends in Montana know, it's always a shame because according to the national media, there's never a fire until California's on fire. but that fire season, the wildfire emissions, and not all of that was forest fires, but a significant chunk was. It was the equivalent of the United States adding a new California and a new Oregon. So in other words, we had carbon emissions equivalent to having two additional states carbon emissions just from wildfires. EPA has a carbon calculator, and I figured it out. It was enough emissions to charge something like 2 billion cell phones.
Paul, that indicates how important it is to keep that infrastructure going. I just want to see what you want to add there. I mean, and of course, Bill and Julia, you've all been in the industry a long time and have seen more and more of this focus on carbon. Paul, just want to get your perspective on that. Is as a company, F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Company, are you looking at carbon sequestration as is it a necessary part of your business model?
You know, we're not looking at it as an entity in its own.
Okay.
For us, I mean, carbon sequestration is just kind of part of what we do. It's one of the multiple benefits of multiple-use management, right? I mean, you take durable wood products, you grow a tree, you take it and turn it into a durable wood product. There is no better way to sequester carbon than that. You take care of your forest, and they are big carbon batteries. You know, like Bill said, you know, sunlight, water, and air, and do you sequester carbon day in and day out? That's not the case if you don't do anything necessarily. You look at our national forest, and, you know, we're at the point in Montana in our national forest where our mortality is greater than our annual growth. So that means our national forests are net emitters of carbon. We have 5.6 million acres that our Montana Forest Action Plan identified as high risk for insect disease and fire. The only option for that without the industry around is for Mother Nature to take care of that. And in Montana, that means fire.
Julia Altimus, Montana Wood Products Association Executive Director. What kind of guidance does your organization provide on CO2?
Well, like Paul said, I mean, it is part of the multiple use benefit of, you know, if you are actively managing your forest, you're going to sequester that carbon. Now, we do have members. There's about over 800,000 acres of industrial timberland that we have members that are managing those lands that belong to Montana Wood. And we have a couple of those members that are involved in carbon credit projects across the country. But they're still managing the forest, even though they may be selling the carbon, they're still managing the trees. So that's an important distinction between some of the other big outfits that are looking at doing some of this but not managing trees for 100 years, and that's just not the answer. So, yeah, we do have a very diverse membership, that's for sure.
I've got a breakup coming here in about 30 seconds, so I'm just going to set the table for that. Bill Imbergamo with us again, Executive Director of the Federal Forest Resource Coalition, a number of years in the industry. Three decades strong yourself there, Bill. Thanks for that. FedForestCoalition.org for more information there. We're also with Paul McKinsey, F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Company. You heard from Julia Altimus as well from the Montana Wood Products Association. We'll come back because the Federal Forest Research Coalition has some specific policy suggestions we'll get into here on Voices.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Attention recipients of Medicaid and Healthy Montana Kids. It's time to complete and return your Medicaid redetermination packet. Don't wait and risk a gap in health coverage. If you haven't received a packet yet, you will soon. Follow the instructions you receive in the mail from DPHHS or complete it online before the due date at apply.mt.gov. That's apply.mt.gov. Brought to you by DPHHS.
As we talk forest management issues and carbon sequestration, and of course the courts are involved in all of this, the health of our forests, as we've noted here with our guests, it's a complicated issue. There seems to be a lot of players, and there's only one grade, as Paul had noted, that's acceptable for the Forest Service, and that's 100%. Paul McKinsey, F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Company. He's the Vice President and General Manager. Company around 111 years. They've been not only providing jobs and timber as well, but have been made their lands available to the community. Big, strong community supporters. Julia Altimus, Executive Director of the Montana Wood Products Association, and the keynote speaker at the MWPA convention, which will be once again at the Hilton Garden Inn in Missoula, 51st annual. It'll be Thursday and Friday, the 28th and 29th of this month. Bill Imbergamo, Executive Director of the Federal Forest Resource Coalition. I appreciate you all being here. I want to get a word in, Bill, about what the FFRC is all about.
So, you know, as I mentioned, you know, Montana Wood was one of our founding members, and basically where we came from was that the larger industry associations here in Washington were more focused on the concerns of some of the bigger paper manufacturers who are generally located away from federal lands, and the mills that were still reliant on federal timber, like all of the mills in Montana, felt they didn't have a voice. And it launched as an informal coalition in 2009, And then with Chuck Rohde, who was Paul's predecessor there at Stultz, who's one of our founding board members, mills around the country and associations around the country rallied and said, hey, you know, we need to be a voice for this part of our sector in Washington because no one else is doing the work. And, you know, we've had some success. Timber volume sold has increased. When we launched, it was right around 2 billion board feet. And now the last 5 years, it's averaging around 2.9 billion board feet. And a lot of that increase has taken place in Region 1. Unfortunately, that's also where we see this litigation just consistently putting volume into injunction. And right now, it's something in the neighborhood of a billion board feet that's enjoined in a variety of projects. And just for your listeners' perspective, that's enough lumber to frame something in the neighborhood of 25,000 to 30,000 homes. So it's, you know, it's a significant impact. You know, home ownership's expensive, interest rates are up, and if you have lumber prices that are the national forests aren't participating in that market, that just makes housing less attainable for everyday Americans.
Well, and it probably makes business pretty hard to conduct, Paul. And we've talked about that here. There seems to be a moving goalpost or a little bit of uncertainty when it comes to, you know, the real value of CO2 to our climate. There's a lot of science that says that no matter what we try to do to address it, it's going to have just a slight impact. I mean, there's more to discuss there, but a billion board feet under injunction, how difficult is that to operate a business under?
You know, it's a huge impediment just for business planning. You know, the biggest challenge that Montana industry has is certainty in our fiber supply. You know, we're all pretty scrappy. We seem to find enough logs to keep our mill running from year to year, but it's literally a year to year, or sometimes a month to month type deal, and it's pretty hard to make business plans going ahead. And so, you know, our sourcing circle is 75% owned by or managed by the Forest Service. You know, and so it's a huge part of our planning for the long term. And so we try to be responsive and work with those partners to respond to what their needs. You know, we're working on how do we handle small diameter timber? How do we handle, you know, the type of wood that they need to manage? But at the same point in time, having some certainty is extremely important to us. And that's where litigation becomes a real problem, because you might buy a timber sale and be planning on logging it in the next 2 to 3 years, and then it goes into litigation and it just disrupts that timing. So it makes it really difficult to operate with that level of uncertainty.
Bill, what are some of those solutions to litigation? I mean, we can do a lot of crying about it, so to speak, but I think sure. There's more movement toward, you know, some type of activity. And I noted before the break, too, and I appreciate that, if folks will go to fedforestcoalition.org. When you guys present some policy, you give some background on it, but that's to say, here's what we can do. So as we look about challenges, we also look at opportunities. What do you see?
So, yeah, I would again stress we need to get cottonwood taken care of, right? This is a decision that was, as I said, there was a 5-year kind of patch that held it in abeyance. But it's important to note the Obama administration appealed that case all the way to the Supreme Court. Probably the only time my organization filed an amicus brief supporting a position of the Obama administration. So, you know, this isn't like this is some crazy right-wing idea. This is, you know, a basic misinterpretation of the law. So we need to extend a fix of that. The other things I would mention would be, you know, the Farm Bill is supposed to get done this year. It's looking, you know, pretty iffy. I've been watching farm bills for most of my career, and I don't know if it's got a path to the finish line this calendar year. But in that bill, there's some tweaks to stewardship contracting. Stewardship contracting has turned out to be a great tool for the Forest Service, but it's got its limitations. Right now, there's no emphasis in the program on retaining existing wood products facilities. And, you know, as we've all stressed throughout this call, if you lose your infrastructure, if you lose not just the mill, the loggers, the truckers, the equipment dealers, the you know, your ag listeners will be familiar with this. If you lose an ag retailer, it gets very difficult to do business. And so amending stewardship contracting to say, hey, when you're selecting these projects, you should select them where there's existing infrastructure. And then with good neighbor authority, there was a change in the last farm bill that actually prohibited states from spending good neighbor receipts on non-federal land. And that was kind of parachuted in at the last minute. We think we understand how it happened, but we're trying to get that rectified because, you know, that's the nature of those projects is you're trying to improve the situation on both sides of the property line, not just the Forest Service side. So we're trying to get that fixed in the new farm bill. I would mention one other thing. You know, probably can't pass in this environment, but as Paul and Julie and I have all emphasized, the courts get to interpret all of these things. We've been working with Senator Thune from South Dakota on a bill that would clarify that if you are in any acre that's been designated as an insect and disease risk area, which is most of the forest in Montana, it would define the NEPA burden on the agency. It would just say you only have to do an environmental assessment and you only have to assess what you plan on doing, not come up with a range of alternatives. And, you know, that seems moderate to me, but in this narrow margin environment is probably a bridge too far.
Julia Altimus, I want to go to you about some of those tools now, and Paul McKenzie as well from F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Company. You will probably have some comments on stewardship contracting. But Julia, maybe follow up with that, but also it's not just folks like F.H. Stoltz. There are transportation. There's just a whole service industry built up around our wood products industry, which is sometimes I think we forget as much a vital, important part of our discussion as anything.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. So currently there's a little bit over 7,000 people in this industry employed within the forest products industry, but that's primary and secondary jobs, employment. And we provide just under $1 billion in sales. That's, you know, primary and secondary as well. So we're not, you know, we're certainly not at the top of the economic engine like we used to be, but I think we're third or second something. We're certainly the largest manufacturing industry in the state of Montana. So it's certainly important that we stay here in order to, and we're the partner that's going to get the work done. And then, like Bill said, if we are not here, it just gets economically impossible to get the work done. It's going to cost the taxpayer way more money than right now. We can add money to the Treasury.
Yes.
If we're not here, we're going to take money out of the Treasury, and there's just not enough money to get all the work done if we're going to do it that way.
Well, and that's why it seems like such a win-win. Paul, stewardship contracting reauthorization has been important. Talk about that tool. But if there are other tools that you'd like to see in your toolbox, so to speak, for forest management and for the economy as well, in those jobs, what would they be?
You know, we've made a lot of progress, as Bill alluded to earlier, and we really try to work as a partner with the Forest Service and try to listen to what their challenges are and try to bring solutions to the table. So stewardship contracting has been a great tool, but one of the ones that's been really effective in Montana is the Good Neighbor Authority, and that's where we bring our state partners to the table to help fill the gaps in what the Forest Service is able to do on their lands or not, maybe doesn't have the resources to do. And that's been extremely helpful in Northwest Montana in our area, where the state DNRC folks have come in and they work with their Forest Service partners to implement projects on the ground and fill the gaps. So if they're short an engineer or a wildlife biologist or an administration forester, you know, the state can step in and say, okay, we can provide that resource to you. You know, the taxpayers, the U.S. taxpayers have made a tremendous investment in the Forest Service. I think somewhere to the scale of $9 or $10 billion nationwide to help enable them to address this wildfire and forest health challenge that we're facing on our public lands. And so that's extremely important stuff. So partnership, working together, bringing tools to the toolbox in solving problems is really how we're trying to work ahead. And that's where FFRC does great work on the policy side in D.C., but it comes back to work here at the ground at a collaborative level or just working together as neighbors. You know, we go to a soccer game and we're sitting right next to the contracting officer from the Flathead National Forest is sitting next to our logging contractor, you know. And so we really are in this together to try to work on the same goals.
A lot of things to discuss here. We'll take a break and come on back and get some final thoughts. And it's hard to say final thoughts because it's certainly an ongoing issue. I'm also going to tease Bill a little bit. He's got Paul as one of his directors And he's an avid hunter and outdoorsman and angler. I bet he's got some secret spots out there that he's not going to share with us. And you come on back with more Voices in just a bit.
If you have Medicaid or Healthy Montana Kids, it's time to renew your coverage. Not sure you still qualify? Don't wait. Complete and return your Medicaid redetermination packet today. If you haven't received a packet yet, you will soon. Follow the instructions you receive in the mail from DPHHS or complete it online before the due date at apply.mt.gov. That's apply.mt.gov. Brought to you by DPHHS.
Fastest hour in radio. We're getting to that weekend real quick. Tom Schultz alongside Voices of Montana. Monday, we'll talk water, especially along the High Line in our Central Montana Water Authority. A big infrastructure project there. More to come. And here with some closing thoughts, Bill Imbergamo is with us. He is with the Federal Forest Resource Coalition. It's fedforestcoalition.org. Also, Paul McKenzie with F.H. Stoltz Land and Lumber Company and Julia Altimus, Montana Wood Products Association. Bill and Paul, I was teasing, well, Bill a little bit because it says here he's a avid hunter, a poor golfer. He sounds like a Montanan, I'll tell you that. Bill, has Paul showed you the secret special 100% successful hunting places on some of that land out there?
You know, no, that hasn't happened yet. But as I noted during the break, I'm an eastern whitetail hunter. So Montana, it's a beautiful place. I'm really lucky to come visit pretty frequently. But I mostly spend my time on rivers. As an eastern whitetail hunter, I climb ladders, not mountains.
That's pretty good. Well, Paul, I'm gonna knock on your door for that secret special hunting spot, or maybe you just don't even know.
Yeah, well, you along with everybody else. It's right. Open to everybody.
Right, yeah. Hey, thanks. Just a few minutes of time here, and maybe that's some closing thoughts. It's hard to get closing thoughts because there's so many issues, and I appreciate, again, some of those solutions coming forward because that's we have to deal with what we have to deal with. But as we're talking about recreation, Bill, I mean, the compatibility of what really our public wants from our resources and the timber industry is right there, isn't it?
Yeah, well, what we did is we looked at the top timber-producing national forests across the system, and unfortunately, Region 1 doesn't have a lot of them that are top producers, but, you know, we looked at their timber numbers and identified the top five, and then we looked at their visitor satisfaction numbers, and there is no difference on a forest that's producing a substantial amount of timber in terms of the visitor satisfaction. And the Forest Service asks these questions periodically on every national forest. And, you know, if you believe what the anti-management crowd says, you would think that the people visiting a national forest that routinely sells timber would say, oh, boy, it was terrible. The scenery was awful. I'm not going back. And that's, you know, the exact opposite of what we found. The visitors are satisfied with the scenery, satisfied with their experience. There really isn't an incompatibility between timber management and recreation on these forests.
And I appreciate that. And Paul, that's played out. One thing that has shown itself up, and we don't have a ton of time left, is that managed forests are kinder to our environment when it comes to wildfires in particular. Any closing thoughts for us, Paul?
You know, I think we just have to keep scope and scale into context here. You know, we've burned 115,000 acres in Montana this year, and we'll probably do timber harvest on 8,000 acres, you know. And so, and what you have to remember is Northwest Montana, we have a fire, 5,000 acres that burned right next to one of our timber sales. There was no NEPA done on that fire. So Mother Nature's moving ahead without us, and we need to figure this thing out. How do we meet the needs of society and also preserve what we value in our forests?
Good point. Appreciate that. Julia Altimus, again, thank you for being here. We're out of time, but you can still attend 51st Annual Convention. Bill Imbergamo is going to be the guest keynote speaker. It's the 28th and 29th. Thanks again for joining us for the podcast, and join us daily Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana, a live issue-oriented talk show heard daily Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on local stations all across Montana.